carry an impact and some weight in our study. So before we get going, I just want to thank all the visitors. I see Ira. Thank you, Ira, for being here. There might be other visitors. No, we do have other visitors. We're glad to have you. We'd greatly appreciate your attendance. If you would, bow with me and let's have a prayer. Our great God and our Father in heaven, we humbly ask you this evening, please be with us as we open the Word and as we study. Please, Father, help us, each and every one of us, to understand how important our role is in influencing and raising and shaping the character of boys in this society. We're destitute of leaders. We're destitute of young men as a nation who are doing what you have commanded us to do. We pray, Father, that each of us would take it very serious, that we might do everything we can, whatever role we have to play, to be a positive influence in the young men of today. And not just the young men, but especially as we're studying. Be with us. May all classes be conducted well and to thy glory. We ask these blessings and favors in the name of Jesus. Amen. All right. So the passage that we had gone to, I don't know if y'all remember, it was a passage in Deuteronomy. And I want you to turn back there with me, and I want to read it again with you. It was Deuteronomy chapter 6. And the passage in, or the terminology in the New American Standard, reads the word sons. If you have the English Standard Version, it will read the term children. And so I want to read the passage again and listen, and where you see that term son or children, I want you to think son. And then I'll make the point to you in a minute, what I've been able to find that might help us. Deuteronomy chapter 6, verses 4 through 9. Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. And you shall love the Lord your God with all of your heart, with all of your soul, and with all of your might. And these words which I'm commanding you today shall be on your heart, and you shall teach them diligently to your sons. And you shall talk of them when you sit in your house, and when you walk by the way, and when you lie down, and when you rise up, and you shall bind them as a sign on your hand, and they shall be as frontals on your forehead, and you shall write them on the doorpost of your house and on your gates. So there's really two points that he's making here. One is who he's addressing the audience to teach these things to. And then the second thing I think is important is how many times he reiterates it. How does God tell these parents, these fathers, to teach their son? Every hour of every day, they'll be as frontals, that's right, on your forehead, on your doorpost. The idea is in every facet of life, whether you're sitting, whether you're standing, whether you're out, whether you're in, whatever you're doing, it's reiterated and it's over and over and over again. Do you feel as parents that you've ever had to do that with sons? Every day. That's right. Lori said that one. But Stephanie would say that too. All right. My mother would say that in a minute and whatever else you can do to it with regards to the raising of her sons. That carries weight and significance to me. All right. Now let me show you what I've done. That's the passage we just started with. Verse 20 and the other verses we talked about, but it was just an extension of the same thing. So David raised a good question, and the question was, well, the lesson is applicable to children just as much as it is to sons, and if the ESV says children, well, this is kind of a universal concept. And that's true. All right, would anyone disagree with that? No, everyone would agree that everything that Moses is reiterating to the people is true. But I want you to go back up into the earlier part of this chapter, all right? And I want you to take a look at this passage. It's Deuteronomy chapter is it 5? Let me see. No, chapter 6. Listen to verses 1 and 2, and listen to what he says. Now, this is the commandment, the statutes, and the judgments which the Lord your God has commanded me to teach you, that you might do them in the land where you are going over to possess it, so that you, and who? And your sons, and who? And your grandsons might fear the Lord your God to keep all of his statutes and his commandments, which I am commanding you all the days of your life, that your days may be prolonged. Does it say children?
No.
It says sons. All right. And this is the point, because it's the same word. Okay, you can see that a whole lot better than I can. Okay, so this, what I did is I went to a Hebrew lexicon, and I wanted to know exactly what the word was, because Shane said it was a masculine tense, as if children and daughter or son might all be, and it can be universal. But I want you to look at the actual language, all right? The actual word, and this is how it's laid out, is you shall teach them diligently to your sons. That Hebrew word is the plural for boys, for sons. It's not a universal term for children, even though the lesson can be applicable to both genders. The Hebrew writer is specifically talking to sons here. Just like in the beginning that I went back to at chapter 6, verses 1 and 2, he's talking to you as the nation and to your sons and to your grandsons. Same people, same word, all right? So I went over to 1121, which is a code which goes into Strong's Concordance. And Strong's Concordance says that this word in Hebrew is translated to be son. That's the literal definition. That's the exact correlation of the Hebrew word into English, okay, is son. And then I went and I looked at others. Now, there are some concordances and, what are they? When you're writing out your explanation of what you think, commentaries, thank you. There are commentaries that utilize the terminology as children, but the actual language and the actual word, I went to another concordance, and it indicated that it is a masculine noun, which means son. So I think that's important. And I think when you go back and you reread the passage that we just read in Deuteronomy that talks about how the parents are to teach their sons, it might click a little light bulb up there. Because there is a difference in the way that you teach boys and the way that you teach girls. And it has to be driven and pounded and reiterated over and over and over with a stick, with a club, with lots of things that are handy at the time. It has to be for most boys. Now, not all boys are that way, but most boys are that way. And I think as we go into the rest of the lesson tonight, you'll see what I'm talking about. So the passage in Deuteronomy 6:2 that translates in even the ESV, sons and grandsons, is the same Hebrew word. It's the same one. So I'm glad you brought that up, because I didn't know that. I didn't know that there was a variation in terminology on that particular term. But I think to make the point clear, as far as I can tell, that there's a very clear masculine sense in the term, and it's referring to sons and grandsons. And I think it's important that we make that point, because the directions, if you go back, were given to the nation in general. Go back to Deuteronomy chapter 5. Look at the very beginning of this. Deuteronomy 5, look in verse 1. This is when Moses brings the people to the mountain, and he says, then Moses summoned all Israel, and he said to them, hear, O Israel, the statutes and the ordinances which I am speaking today in your hearing, that you may learn them and observe them carefully. Verse 3, for the Lord did not make this covenant with our fathers, but he made it with us, with all of those of us who are alive here today. Now look down in verse 9, and I think this is important. Moses explains to them that God is the God who brought them out of Egypt, and he alone is the one to be served, to be honored, to be worshiped. And idolatry will not be permitted. And in verse 9, he says, you shall not worship them or serve them, for I, the Lord your God, am a jealous God, visiting the iniquity of the fathers on the children and on the third and fourth generation of those who hate me. Now, this is the point that I was trying to make, that I get to make tonight, hopefully a little bit more clear. Whom is the responsibility given that the consequence for violating this will be plagued on generation after generation to the fourth generation? It is given to fathers. That's exactly right. And that's the point. From Adam's first sin. Do you remember Shane's lesson a couple of weeks ago? I thought about this as I was going through all of this. You remember Shane's lesson two Sundays ago, when he brought up the story of Adam and Eve in the garden? Do you remember who he charged with the first sin? Who? Adam. But Eve's the one who took the fruit and ate, right? Why was it Adam that bears the brunt and the guilt of bringing sin into the garden?
That's the reason why this is all going towards the men, because they're the leaders.
Okay. God charged Adam with doing what for the garden? Being the protector. That was his job. He was to protect and to tend and to care for everything in the garden. First and foremost was whom? Eve, his wife. And Shane made it so clear. I didn't really understand that as clearly as he did when he explained it. Because Adam was where when Eve was being tempted? He was present with her. He was there. And he failed. He was derelict in the most important job that God had given him as the protector of what God had created. Especially that which he had created in his own image, which was Eve. That was his job. And he failed at it. And so when I say from Adam, as the sons go, so goes society. When you look at who Moses charges with the plague and the penalty and the consequence of sin, it's the father's job. When the fathers go astray, when the men fail to be men and do what God has charged them with doing, what happens? Look at today. What happens? Society breaks down. And when you look at what men have done today, or what men have not done as a society, and you look at all the homes, all the children that have no guidance, they have no fathers, and you wonder, what in the world are all of these kids doing? What's causing it? Why is it plaguing us so badly? That's why. That's why. It's always in the history of Israel that the men have failed to be what God has charged them with being. And as a result, the nation faces the consequences. And that's exactly what Moses is saying then. The same applies to us today. All right. So that's kind of where we were and where we are. Only 15 minutes. That's nothing. All right. Does anybody have any comments or questions, anything to add to it? All right. Very good. So let me just tell you, we're going to deal with one point tonight. We're going to deal with the most important, the most fundamental, the most basic, but yet the most consequential to society, if failed, dealing with sons. And it has to deal with discipline. Now, it was interesting because Dean the other night, when he was teaching one of his last classes, he was talking about his daughters. You remember that, Dean? You were talking about the girls when they got in trouble. Do you remember what you said you did when Grace or one of the girls got in trouble to really bring them to their knees? No, you didn't say you talked to them. Boy, I remember, Dean. No, you. What did he do? Does anybody? He said he was disappointed, and he communicated that how? With his look. With his look. And what did that do to your girls? It crushed them. I've heard so many daughters say that about what their dads did when they looked at them that way. When you look at Luke with that same look of disappointment, how could you? What does Luke do? I'll tell you what he does. He does what the Haley boys did. What you looking at me for? What's wrong? Something like that. Something like that. Now, I will tell you, to my discredit, I have acquired the look that works with boys. But it is the most gruesome, the most unattractive look. And Stephanie will tell you that as well. It is the look of sheer horror. And it has to be in order to work with boys. They must know that you are communicating something with the look more than disappointment. It has to be a near-death experience before it's going to impact them. Before they really, Reagan's over there looking, yeah, I know what he's talking about. That's right. And I will tell you that that's not usually how you're going to get a boy's attention. The way you're going to get the boy's attention is you're going to go back and you're going to reread Deuteronomy chapter 6. And you're going to get his attention how? When he sits, when he stands, when he's out of the house, when he's in the house, on his floor, every way possible. And then twice on Sunday, and then Monday you start it all over again. That's the way it is when you're talking about raising boys. And so I really want us to be impressed with that boys are, they're not just trying to be stubborn or bullheaded or exasperating. They're just made that way. And we do it well. And we're naturally DNA given that kind of ability without even trying to really make it hard. And so be patient with us. Be patient with your husbands, because while they're grown men and they and we should be mature, we revert oftentimes back to those days. And we have a hard time as well. So please. And I see some young women in here who are probably never going to marry after this lesson. But let's go to this passage in Hebrews. Hebrews chapter 12, verses 5 through 11. Did I give that passage to anybody to read? David, you got it? Read it.
This is the unscriptural.
Okay, go.
And have you forgotten the exhortation that addresses you as sons?
My son, do not regard lightly the discipline of the Lord, nor be weary when reproved by him. For the Lord disciplines the one he loves and chastises every son whom he receives. It is for discipline that you have to endure. God is treating you as sons. For what son is there whom his father does not discipline? If you are left without discipline, in which all have participated, then you are illegitimate children and not sons. Besides this, we have had earthly fathers who disciplined us, and we respected them. Shall we not much more be subject to the Father of spirits and live? For they disciplined us for a short time, as it seemed best to them, but he disciplines us for our good, that we may share his holiness. For the moment, all discipline seems painful rather than pleasant, but later it yields the peaceful fruit of righteousness to those who have been trained by it.
All right. Now that's quite extensive. But the Hebrew writer is writing, and he's writing as a father. And he's talking to the Christians as parents, and he's emphasizing the relationship that we have with the Father. And he contrasts that even with the relationship as fathers and sons. And he talks about the entire time discipline. And there's a very clear reason, like we just made with Grace and the girls. There's a reason discipline is different with boys. But it is absolutely crucial that discipline is given to boys, like the writer says. Now, let me ask you this. What was the old law's requirement when you had a rebellious son?
Shoot him?
Okay. If only it was so painless. Yeah. Listen to this. Deuteronomy chapter 8 or 21. And I'm going to read 18 through 21. Listen to this. If any man has a stubborn and rebellious son who will not obey his father or his mother when they chastise him, and he will not listen to them, then his father and mother shall seize him and bring him out to the elders of his city at the gateway of his hometown. And they shall say to the elders of the city, "This son of ours is stubborn and rebellious. He will not obey us. He's a glutton and a drunkard." Then the men of the city shall stone him to death. And you shall remove the evil from your midst, and all Israel will hear of it. Why are they picking on the boys? Why are they picking and picking out sons who are rebellious and will not listen to their parents?
Well, because they will eventually be leaders and heads of the household. And as you've already said, Adam fell with Eve, and eventually there was, you've got to think that that fell was a problem when Cain and Abel came along. Mm-hmm.
I think you're exactly right, brother. Because when a rebellious son goes unreproved, it permeates into the society. And it has to be gotten rid of, or society bears the brunt. It spreads from one to another. And before you know it, the generations who really pay the consequence from it are way down the road. Look at us today. Look at the generations. You can go back and look at the fall of how men in this American society have failed in their role as leaders, in their role as fathers, in their role as husbands, in their role as providers, as men, the way God said back in Hebrews they should be. We have failed, and we're reaping the consequences of it. That's why it was such a harsh consequence, because it was so dangerous to a society if it were to happen. So, we know how the story ends, really. In all honesty, if you look at where we are now, and where we've been going for the last 4 or 5 decades. But it's not always, I know I keep putting my glasses on and off, sorry. Because I want to read, but I want to talk. So It's not always doom and gloom. It can be changed. The direction can be changed, but it takes a monumental effort. But it's got to start somewhere. Why does God discipline those whom he loves? Let's talk about this just for a minute. God disciplines, the Hebrew writer said. Why? Because what does it lead to? Huh? It leads to the peaceful fruit of righteousness. It's the way peace is acquired. Go back and listen to what the Hebrew writer says. He says, listen, all discipline for the moment seems not to be joyful, but sorrowful. Yet to those who've been trained by it, afterwards it yields the peaceful fruit of righteousness. Look, discipline is for a reason. Discipline is intended to do what? Okay, it's intended to bring peace. It's implemented, though, and that's the ultimate goal of it. But why is discipline given? Why is it exercised?
It provides a positive stepping stone toward progress. And why I say that, in verse 9, where we're reading, the beginning of verse 9 in the New King James Version, furthermore, we have had human fathers corrected us, and we paid them respect. Shall we not much more readily be in subjection to the Father of spirits and live? In other words, it's a positive in the flesh, in this here and now. It's a positive reinforcement. It's a positive growth for us physically, but especially spiritually.
So you make a good point. And that is a correlation of fathers. But you know what he says in the very next verse? Look what he says in the very next verse. For they discipline, talking about the earthly fathers, for a short time as they seem best. But he disciplines for our good, that we might share his holiness. What does the Hebrew writer then indicate when he says that?
We don't have a relationship with the Father. We won't be his sons if we don't convert. If he doesn't change us, that comes through discipline.
That's exactly right. That's the ultimate thing. But what does he say about earthly fathers? Earthly fathers disciplined as they seemed best, as they thought best. What does that imply? They make mistakes compared to the Heavenly Father. That's right. So earthly fathers, we discipline. We try to teach our sons. We try to train them. We try to exercise discipline so that it changes their behavior. But we make mistakes. But ultimately, what does discipline do to the, what does it cause the child? Pain. That's exactly right. Let me tell you this. If you discipline your child in a way that does not cause pain, you have failed to do what it's designed to do. All you've done is create a callus for your child. That doesn't hurt so bad. It doesn't hurt so bad. Think about it. Touch the stove. What happens the first time you touch the stove? It burns you. But do you know if you kept touching the stove, what would eventually happen? Yeah, you develop what on your hand, your fingers? Calluses. You'd be calloused to it. It would still burn you, but it wouldn't hurt as bad. You wouldn't be as sensitive to the consequence. That's what discipline is without pain. I don't mean it has to be physical pain. It's not like you've got to beat them half to death, but it has to be painful. The experience, in order to change them, in order for them to see that what they've done carries a huge consequence, it has to be connected with pain in somewhere. Now, Dean's girls, they internalize that. That may be Dean may have the look of disappointment that is so powerful, it can cause those little girls to just melt. It won't work with boys the same way. It won't. You have to be able to shape and to alter their behavior. And I'm telling you, it has to be painful. That's what the Hebrew writer said. God disciplines, he scourges his children. Why does he do it? Because he loves them. You love your children, you'll discipline them in a way, especially your sons, in a way that will create and cause pain and change the behavior. David?
And I think the very end of verse 11, there's three key words there. Trained by it.
Yeah.
Training involves teaching. Mm-hmm. It involves some kind of instruction after the discipline or after the activity has occurred. Too many times children will get punished and never be told why or never be told what they're being punished for. It's just don't do that, move on, and there's never any instruction to teach them why. So they figure, oh, dad's having a bad day, they go on and do it again, not understanding the consequence, not seeing maybe a long-term effect of the consequence that you can go out and show through other, you know, people who've done it before. There's a teaching that goes on with the discipline. Discipline has to be strong and striking enough that the child goes, okay, this is not something I ever want to do again, for not just dad's anger, but because it's destructive to me as well. Yeah,
that's exactly right. And ultimately, there are two purposes. Look here. One is so that the child will associate the negative behavior and the consequence, which is the pain. They've got to associate that. Because ultimately, what you'll end up doing, if they don't make that connection, they'll ultimately become grown men. And they won't connect their behavior, their actions, with pain. With anybody, not just themselves. Look at what we've got today in society. We have got people who have no conscience when it comes to hurting other people. They don't feel it. Doesn't bother them. I take what I want. I hurt you if I need to or if I want to. They don't feel any remorse. They've never been taught that. And I'm telling you, just through my limited experience, and I know that there's a lot of folks in here, the Smiths have got experience, lots of people as teachers have experience, but even in your own home, if you have any connection with what's going on in our society and young people, painful consequence that happens when they do things, not only painful consequence to them, but ultimately, that's what you should learn as an adult. My actions have consequences, not just to me. As a child, you think it's just me. But as an adult, you're supposed to transcend that. And you're supposed to understand my actions have consequences to other people. I'm not the only one who hurts. We've got people who have children. They don't care about their children. Their actions show it. It doesn't matter to them. They're just children. Somebody else's problem. You see, how could a father think that way? Through what I'm telling you. They don't make that connection. It doesn't hurt them. As long as it's not coming out of my pocket, it doesn't hurt me. That is the kind of society we have in a large part. Lori?
A lot of it has to start when we're very, very young. Mm-hmm. You know, I teach 1 and 2 year olds. And I try to teach them the consequences it's going to, what they're going to do. You bite somebody. What happens if you do this? And I'm constantly dealing with, we've always have to have positive reinforcement for whatever they do. They don't want a bad note to go home. You know, and if I have gotten to the point where I do have to say something to the parent for whatever this child keeps doing over and over and over, I'll have parents come in, oh, well, they don't know any better, and they'll pick them up and they do have a bad day and pat them on the back. And I'm just standing there looking at them like, you just totally undid everything I'm trying to teach.
Lori makes a good point, and I know that a lot of us have seen it. And so, yes, sir.
Changed our society.
Yeah, you're right. And that was I was in the generation that was applied to. My dad didn't believe in it, but there were lots of people who did. And you're right. You're exactly right. All right. Now, we've got a lot still to cover and not a lot of times. So what I want to do is I'm skipping that. I want to go to the passages in Proverbs. I've given out four passages. Whoever has the first one, Proverbs 13:24, go.
Whoever spares the rod hates his son, but he who loves him is diligent to discipline.
22:15.
Foolishness is downness in the heart of the child, but rod of discipline will remove him far from him.
23.
Do not hold back discipline from the child. Although you strike him with the rod, he will not die. You shall strike him with the rod and rescue his soul from Sheol.
29:15-17, Ron.
The rod and rebuke give wisdom, but a child left to himself brings shame to his mother. Correct your son, and he will give you rest. Yes, he will give delight to your soul.
Okay. So, who's writing? Who's the author? I only picked four. You know it's loaded with a lot more. Who's the author? Who's he writing to? Why isn't he talking about daughters? He had daughters, right?
They were going to be king.
They were going to be the successors, and how they were raised was going to impact the nation. They had to be trained and reproved and taught and disciplined. We have to do that. Is it fun? No, it's not. Well, unless you got Reese, when he was like three, Stephanie used to say, "No, it's my turn." And he'd have to be taken out, of course. But, of course, look how he turned out. I'm so proud of him. The beatings worked, I'm telling you. So, all right. So anyways, he's writing to sons, and he's making the point over and over and over. It is for their good. All right? So, but let me ask you this. What happens when sons grow up without learning this? I want you to turn over to the story of Eli. 1 Samuel chapter 2. Turn over with me, and we're going to read this right quick. And I just want to make a quick point. I know we're running out of time, and I still have more material, but quickly. 1 Samuel chapter 2. Read with me starting in verse 22. Now Eli was very old, and he heard all that his sons were doing to all Israel, and how they were laying with women who served at the doorway of the tent of meeting. And he said to them, "Why do you do such things, the evil things that I hear from all these people? Know, my sons, for the report is not good, which I hear, that the Lord's people are circulating. If one man sins against another, God will mediate for him. But if a man sins against the Lord, who can intercede for him?" Skip down to verse 27. Then a man of God came to Eli and said to him, "Thus says the Lord, did I not indeed reveal myself to the house of your father when they were in Egypt in bondage to Pharaoh's house? And did I not choose?" Goodness gracious, can we do something about that? "Did I not choose them from all the tribes of Israel to be my priest, to go up to my altar, to burn incense, to carry an ephod before me? And did I not give to the house of your father all the fire offerings of the sons of Israel? Why do you kick at my sacrifice and at my offering, which I've commanded in my dwelling? And honor," listen, "and honor your sons above me, by making yourselves fat with the choicest of every offering of my people Israel." Then chapter 3, 10 through 14. "Then the Lord came and stood and called as at other times, 'Samuel, Samuel.' And Samuel said, 'Speak, for thy servant is listening.' And the Lord said to Samuel, 'Behold, I'm about to do a thing in Israel at which both ears of everyone who hears it will tingle. In that day I will carry out against Eli all that I've spoken concerning his house from beginning to end, for I have told him that I am about to judge his house forever for the iniquity which he knew, because his sons brought a curse on themselves, and he did not what? He didn't rebuke them. He didn't discipline. He didn't correct them. And you know this story. And the consequence of his wife and the grandchild. That's the consequence. How can a prophet of God, a great man like Eli, who served the Lord all of his life be such a lousy father? I don't know. I really don't know. I don't understand it. How could a man who knows God's will so intimately choose to honor his sons above his father, his God? How could he do that? Well, he could do it the same way we do it. When we say, no, I don't think so. No, not this time. Or it won't happen again. We are responsible for how we raise and discipline and reprove our children. All right, so I'm out of time, and I'm not going to be able to make this point. There is one thing I want to say, though. Genesis 18, 9, you compare him to Abraham. And you listen, for I've chosen him in order that he may command his children in his household after him to keep the way of the Lord by doing righteousness. It's not what you say. It's not just what you teach. It's how you live. By doing righteousness in order that the Lord may bring upon Abraham what he's spoken about him. How did Abraham show Isaac that God was to be honored above all? Chapter 22, when he said, I will give your life, because that's what he asked for. It's what you do, fathers, not what you say. So I wanted to get into this and just have a little bit of discussion. We don't have time, but I want to end with this. Don't ring that bell. Don't ring the bell. I'm saying don't ring it. I mean it. Play this. All right. There's no volume. They have to hear it.
Charming subject, but not for Bernard.
Okay.
Mr. Trench.
We've had some excellent essays.
So
many concentrated on a world at peace.
It didn't go well.
Excellent.
There was one very touching one from a young boy with a very sick sister, just wishing that she could, for just one day, Christmas Day, be well again.
I do hope that happens. I'd like you to read your son's contribution.
Look at him.
Wait, I have to do it now.
I'm sorry, Mrs. Williams, but I think Bernard must face up to what he's done. Here and now.
Okay.
I've thought extremely hard about what I would wish for at Christmas. But after long consideration...
You misspelled consideration.
Sorry.
After
long consideration, I've decided this is my Christmas wish. That is for one day you could see people's farts. Can you imagine anything more fun? You get to the end of a huge Christmas meal and your grandmother lets rip. And at last, for once, she can't blame the dog. You go to church and for the first time ever, it's fun. And then, finally, you get the moment we've waited for all our lives.
And we must, of course, never forget
this
the
is
importance
her.
Of tradition. And the importance of family.
Right, I see. That is disappointing. I'm embarrassed and almost ashamed. Do you mind if I have a word with Bernard outside?
Sorry, Mum.
I'm sorry too, Bernie. Sorry and ashamed and embarrassed that I have put you in a school
that they don't get a good gag when they see one. I mean, look, this is high-class comedy. This is first-rate stuff.
Look, you're my son. And obviously, I have to love you. But right now, I really love you.
All right. So you might say, that was rude, and you shouldn't have played that because it says the word fart. And Stephanie is going to really be mad at me. I know she hates that word. But I have to tell you that I wanted to show it because it illustrates to me in a very humorous way what happens in today's society, today's schools. Boys, has anybody ever been, had a teacher, a principal, AP, somebody call you, your son's in trouble or something like that, whatever happened? It's happened to us, all right? I'm sure it's happened to a lot of you. The fact of the matter is that parenting requires you to understand what really is truly gravely deficit in your child's character and what's not. And you got to be the one to make that decision. And you've got to be the one who's knowing when to bring the hammer down, because this is a violation of a standard that God has given us to live by. And you got to understand that some things are going to just have to be laughed at, and they're just going to have to be swept under the rug, and you're just going to have to go on. And it's not that big of a deal. There are much bigger things to deal with. We've got our hands full with the stuff we've talked about doing tonight and shaping leaders. That stuff isn't really worth spending a lot of time on. So make the big things what we focus on. I hope this has been helpful. I've enjoyed preparing it. I sure do love the Haley boys. They've given me a lot of good experience and learning. So I tell you that it's an honor and privilege, but it's one that we need to take seriously in today. Thank y'all.